Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
I'll kick the coverage here on this Thursday. Hope yours is going well. Ours is going fantastic.
A lot of football.
Yeah.
If you had not mentioned it in our chat, you probably would have gone away with it, but you said it, so that's your fault now.
We heard it right away.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because Danny comes into my ear. I mean, I said the new sport of footwell, and then Danny says that was probably – That was probably an event on the Ocho yesterday.
Yes, I saw the slippery stairs yesterday, by the way.
Yes, I watched that while I was on my show last night. It was amazing.
I missed it.
Did you see that? The champion, Cooper Jones, was the champion.
It was basically what you would see on a Japanese game show. It was exactly what we thought. The players were in spandex. There was baby oil. They're running upstairs. They were tackling each other down the stairs. You know, like one would get up to the very top and slip and take out everybody. Exactly what you thought it would be.
Well, yeah. I'm sad that I missed it. I ended up not getting to watch much of the Ocho. But yeah, footwell is the new sport that I don't know exactly what it is. There is a such thing as a footwell, but this would not be particularly interesting. But
a lot of footwell.
By the way, I have a folder for Outkick that says amazing teases. There's been times where Clay says, next hour, next. and so this is going to join. Here's the tease. Listen.
We come back, a lot of footwell. Barnwell's article, tons more to get to. When we come back, a lot of footwell.
Like I said, this
a lot
is
of
getting,
footwell.
This is getting into the weeds, but I'm a creature of routine and a creature of habit. And unfortunately, my protein bar of choice did not make it into my bag this morning. And that's pretty much how I start every single day, is with one of four brands of protein bars. And me not having it, I was trying to decide, do I have time to go to a convenience store and get one? Well, and then I thought, well, that's $3. I'm paying for a wedding. We're handling a lot of things. I can't go do that. I should save it. I can get home, and then I can get to my protein bar then. And this was a mistake, because everything feels completely wrong because I don't have this thing. So I'm like tripping over words. I'm using footwell. I have no idea if I'm going to start talking about the right teams in this Bill Barnwell article, not the Bill Barnball article, but I could have potentially gone there as well. So I'm just, right now, I'm just on the struggle bus. That's the best way to put it.
The struggle bus. We had one of my coaches I played for did a whole thing on the energy bus. Like, we have to be in the energy bus and a practice. Everyone was screaming about energy buses. It's really, oh God, I love it. Energy bus. You have to be the energy bus.
Right. Stupid. Yeah. The phraseology can be pretty problematic. I agree. I had a discussion last night about the word goober.
Oh, you continued the discussion.
Yeah. I wanted to see when I just used it, what people thought. And so I used it with my fiance, and she immediately pretty much said, yeah, corny's kind of the word. Corny is the word. It's not really being a jerk. It's just being annoying. It's being annoying and uncool.
I feel like goober is somewhere between corny and a D-bag.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think Derek Carr is corny.
You don't?
Because sometimes when you're corny, you do it for a reason. You just are that corny guy. And no, I don't think he's corny. I think he's a goober.
Is J.J. Watt a goober?
Okay, for example, corny people don't roll their sleeves up. Don't roll their sleeves up and put baby oil on their arms.
He said it was suntan lotion.
That's what he said, but his dudes were calling him out for putting baby oil on his arms.
Yeah. So do you think it was baby oil, or do you think it was sunscreen?
Sunscreen that I put on is never shiny.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I put some on yesterday, and it immediately dried through. So, yeah, you're probably right. He probably did put, yeah. Well, and if that's true, then that's gooberish.
It does depend what kind you use, because there's that spray
on. Here comes
on.
Raiders defender right
nah,
here.
No, not at all, because yesterday I called him out on it and said I liked how his teammate was busting his chops over it. But there is that spray on sunscreen, and
that's
has
true.
A little bit of shine. But the whole thing with the sleeves, dude, you're a quarterback. Stop it.
Correct. Like no one. Congratulations that you have big arms. It doesn't matter. Peyton Manning.
Can
Tom
you take
Brady,
those arms and throw it accurately down the field 30 yards consistently?
Us Raider fans were screaming at the screen. Okay, throw the ball farther than 20 yards now. Because what we saw early on from Carr was he could throw the ball 60 yards with a flick of the wrist. But then ever since the injury, yeah, he's been gun-shy and he just checks down all the time.
In this offense, though, you know, it doesn't – there's not a necessity to throw the ball as deep as maybe other offenses. I mean, look, John Gruden ideally is going to do it what Andy Reid did with Alex Smith. Right? I mean, that's the West Coast offense. That's what he wants to run, right? Timing routes – short routes, some play action. You know, what Pat Mahomes did in Andy Reid's offense last year is not typical for what Andy Reid, you know, asked in a West Coast offense. So that's what Gruden wants to do. So I get why, you know, not throwing the ball maybe deep is always something that Carr is going to do in this offense. But to your point, ever since he got hurt, he does look a little gun-shy in general about throwing the ball deep.
Yeah, and I think that there's something to be said for coaches that are willing to take shots early in games just to keep defenses honest. And it's better to be able to keep defenses honest when you actually believe your quarterback can complete that throw. And when you don't see him, I can understand why. And of course, every lay fan wants to see a deep ball. They want to see you go deep. And anytime you're struggling, they immediately think, well, why aren't you throwing it 35 yards downfield to this guy? He's making 15 mil a season or whatever. That's just the way fans' mentality is.
Oh, no, it definitely is that way. And especially with, you know, paying Antonio Brown, who may or may not ever play again with his – with his frostbitten feet.
Do you buy, what is with this, man? Like, so when you think about this frostbite deal, where are you on this?
So we have David Chow on later. I'm glad, yes, we have him on because I think he's a skeptic about what actually happened. Because to his point, I saw his tweets about it. If you have frostbite, they're being on your toes, not on the bottom of your feet. And the fact is, you're not in those cryo chambers really long enough. So, like, how come you know, the rest of your body doesn't get this way when you're in the cryo chamber? I guess if your feet are on the cold, I guess, bottom of the cryotherapy chamber, maybe it'd be different. I just think they're using that as kind of an excuse. I don't know what's wrong with his feet, but I know that John Gruden's going to be pissed about it, and I hope that Hard Knocks spends a big amount of time on John Gruden's reaction to when he actually learns the news about why
frostbite.
AB is not at practice. And look, all I could think about when I saw this was the Steelers are probably glad this drama's not their problem anymore. You know, this is... You know, people like to blame Big Ben for everything that happened in Pittsburgh. And, well, I think he does have some blame thrown his way. I think Antonio Brown brought a lot of drama in that locker room. And the Steelers are going to benefit from not having that kind of vibe in their locker room anymore. Remember, he went on Facebook Live,
yes,
and filmed himself celebrating after a game.
In the middle of a meeting, right?
No, it was in the locker room. Was it in the locker room after the game?
Yeah, but wasn't it like Tomlin was speaking to the team while he
was
doing it?
Yeah, he was speaking to the team about beating New England the next week, I believe it was. He said, yep, like you know, some inflammatory language, which is what coaches do in the locker room, and because it should be a private area to do something like this. So I think with the drama gone, man, the Steelers are probably pumped about this. I mean, they're probably...
Yeah, but Jeff, in all fairness, Big Ben blamed...
Raiders defender.
Okay, no, so you don't want to hear the other side?
I agree.
This is not all. Look,
Danny, you played footwell like 15 times. I'm going to say Raiders defender every time he starts to hit something.
Danny,
good.
Big Ben should not have done that. I just said that.
Yeah, he threw his own players under the bus. He had that stupid radio thing he did after the game.
That's one thing.
But that was a big deal, though. You don't... When you throw a pass... He is. Because when you throw a pass that badly, you do not blame your receiver. I'm no Steelers fan, but when that happened, I was like, oh, boy, that's a bad look for the Steelers. If I was a Steelers fan, I'd be pissed at my quarterback for saying that about the receiver.
Yeah, well, Roethlisberger's always kind of been an ass, though, right? Like, this ain't new.
Right.
Correct. This is not news.
So it's on both of them. Now, all of a sudden, I've been seeing these Steeler blogs the past couple of days. Like, see, it was AB. It was all
no,
AB. No, it wasn't. It was both.
It's both, but I'm telling you, they're going to be better without the drama of Antonio Brown. There's other things that happened behind the scenes. Like it's just like the whole Week 17 thing that happened. Like, that is not acceptable.
Well, I think Big Ben learned because he cut off that radio thing and he tried to apologize to AB for...
He didn't try. He did apologize.
Yeah, he did.
Well, I say try because it came way late.
Yeah, but he acknowledged it.
By that point, the damage was done and the... the guy bailed.
I think AB's going to have a rude awakening this year playing.
He's going to realize how good he had it in Pittsburgh. He's not going to have all of what he had there. And this is not me piling on the Raiders because, I mean, he's great. The thing with Antonio Brown is, and this is one of the biggest themes on this radio program since day one, Danny, you know this full well, do your benefits outweigh your problems? We've talked about it as it relates to I don't know how many different athletes and how many different scenarios that have come up from a positive and negative context. And when you think about Antonio Brown, you get a whole lot of touchdowns, you get unbelievable speed, you get great hands, great route running, just an incredible Hall of Fame level football player on every single metric. But when he is in the airport on his way to your city, meaning to play for you, he is coming with four extra pieces of luggage. Like, there is a lot of baggage as it relates to Antonio Brown. And as long as you're willing to take on that Samsonite, you're going to be all right. But you're going to have things like this that creep up because he's not necessarily quiet. And the Mr. Big Chest thing was not just to get out of Pittsburgh. It's just kind of part of overall, it appears. He just has some weird things that follow him around. And so is it worth it? And guess what? The answer is yes. If you're a Raider, you should be elated that Antonio Brown plays for you. But there are going to be days when he's going to make you want to pull your hair out.
Well, in this case, it's an injury where we're not exactly sure what happened. And John Gruden doesn't sound like he knows everything about it yet either. And to Jeff's point, it's going to be fun to watch the next couple episodes of Hard Knocks to see how deep they dive into it. But there is going to be no more excuses for Carr as far as these little check down passes he's been making the past couple of seasons. Because finally he's got a couple of receivers with breakaway speed. Even with bad bottoms of the feet, we've seen video of the one or two practices AB has had where he's still blowing past the defense.
Blew past everybody,
with bad feet.
Well, here's the question, though, Danny. Is that how great Antonio Brown is or how mediocre that secondary is? Like, does that scare you about your defense or does that make you feel really good about Antonio Brown?
They don't have scrubs right now in the defensive backfield.
Raiders defender.
You're telling me that you don't think they made good moves on that defense the past couple of drafts?
I do. I just wanted to get to Raiders defender again.
Look, I talked about it the other day that I thought that was a strong point. We talked about how they still have no pass rush, really. But they did fix their secondary. And Gerrion Conley, he played really well last season. So that was a bright spot in a bad season, in a mostly bad season. But quietly in the second half of the season, Derek Carr, he was good as far as accuracy went. He just wasn't really throwing the ball down the field. He was Mr. Checkoff. And that was pissing a lot of fans off because we even had some open receivers down the field a little bit, and he just wasn't getting the ball to those guys because there wasn't enough separation for him to trust himself. But now with Tyrell Williams separating himself down the field, AB burning past defenders, if his, you know, cryo feet can heal, he's going to have wide open guys, I think, 15, 20 yards down the field. Can he pull the trigger and get over the mental issues he's had since that broken leg?
I think that John Gruden can't wait to get rid of Carr.
See, that's the way I felt about it. Even though he's pleasant with him and he's nice enough to him, I think he wants somebody else.
I think next year he is going to get a quarterback of his own that's not Derek Carr. Maybe it's Justin Herbert. Maybe it's Tua. Maybe it's a trade for someone. He was very enamored this year with Kyler Murray, which is interesting because it doesn't really fit what his offense is. So that was kind of fascinating to me. But nonetheless, I don't – him and Carr, like, Carr getting the – buying the house next to him, like, why? Why would you want to do that?
It's a goober move.
Like, when you leave the facility, dude, you want to leave the facility. You don't want to be next to the coach.
Yeah, see,
like,
now that's –
stop sucking up to him, man. Dude, like, that's such a weird thing to do.
That's so right. Like, here in Nashville on my show, and I do a lot of writing, obviously, and I've kind of asked for, hopefully, a space, like a private space, not necessarily an office, but somewhere I can close a door and be able to write and not necessarily be interrupted.
In your building?
Yes, and the reason why that is because I want to stop writing at home as much because it doesn't feel like home. Because when I'm at home and I start working, then any time that I'm at home, I feel like I should or could be. And so there needs to be kind of that separation between your work life and your home life,
right?
So that you can get some kind of a break. Moving next to the coach ensures that you will not think of anything other than sucking up to the coach or right. your football stuff. It's like, no, like you need to get away. That's the whole point of when they put you in a hotel and say, hey, your family can't be here for a few days. They're trying to separate you so that your focus is on one thing. If you don't have an escape from your work because your work follows you everywhere, that's not good. It's not good at all, as a matter of fact. Plus, I'm sure Gruden could see through it, and he probably doesn't want David Carr living yeah. next to him either.
Well, Gruden, look, they're not going to actually see each other much probably during the season, obviously, because they're in the facility so much and they're in the facility so long. You know what's funny? I work at home, obviously. I'm home now. Oh, no, sorry. I'm in the studio now. And and well I write done. At home. I do my web, a lot of my web stuff at home. And like I've never had that problem of feeling like I'm at home and I can't work. I know, like, for example, my dad has worked at home now for 15 years, his own company. And like he will put on like, quote, unquote, work clothes at home to feel like he's working. I'm in like house clothes. Like I'm in like a large oversized t-shirt from when I was in college and just some Oregon shorts. Like I'll wear this the entire day unless I leave the house. And I have no problem with kind of working at home. I know other people do. I don't know why. It doesn't really, I don't have an issue with it. I don't have a problem
working at home. I have a problem feeling like I'm not doing what I should be doing because when I'm at home, I could be working. Like, it's the flip side. Like, when I write at home 2 or 3 days in a row, and then I don't write for a couple of days, I feel like, oh, well, I've been lazy because I haven't written for the last couple of days. I like there to be some kind of a separation. So sometimes now I'll just go write at a coffee shop or something with headphones on. Well, but I don't really like that. I kind of just want it to be, well, yeah, I'm definitely a headphones guy. I'm also a Bose SoundSport guy as it relates to just walking around a grocery store. Or something like that. Like, I am that guy 1,000,000%. If you see me out somewhere shopping, it's usually with a podcast in my ear, unless I'm with somebody.
Interesting. So you just don't want to be talked to in public, so you're that guy. He's no, that guy, Danny. Don't talk no. to me in public. I'm Jason Marn. I got my own radio show in Nashville now.
Yeah, that's definitely me. You know me.
You're
unapproachable.
You're a new guy. I don't like this new guy.
Well, at least he's not wearing a muumuu. Jeff was saying when you don't have to leave your house,
you can pretty much
dress like a slob.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Unless you have to answer the door, and then you're kind of embarrassed because you're not presentable at all. I tend to agree with Jason because when you leave the house, you're forced to actually be presentable.
Jeff's like, wait a second here. Presentable.
I'll take a picture today of what I look like to go get my kids from or my daughter from school today, and we'll just debate whether or not I look presentable. I haven't shaved in like 2 weeks. My hair is all over the place. I'm not sure I'm presentable. It's funny. I'll go pick up my kids at school, and my daughter now she's the only one at preschool.
I look like I'm in a hairnet and rollers.
I look like I'm awful. And like every now and then, I'll have to show up like dressed up for whatever reason, and people are like in shock. They're like, oh wow, I didn't know you could like do that.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome back to the Geico Outkick Studios. Outkick the Coverage. I'm Jason Martin, along with Jeff Schwartz. He's at Jeff Schwartz. Argue with him there on Twitter. I'm at JMartZone. Say nice things to me.
I'm tired this morning.
I'm just kidding. You can say whatever you want to say to me. So, W. Arbro's here with me in Nashville, and he was telling me a story during the break that I completely have not seen, but this is sort of original. So, Dub, what is happening at the Northern Trust Open this morning?
Yeah, so PGA Tour Northern Trust Open, first of the playoff events this season. But there were some very, very bad storms yesterday in New Jersey and the surrounding area. So they closed off the course until 10 this morning. So no patrons are going to be on the course until 10 o'clock. Well, Tiger Woods, the main man, he tees off at 7:45. So probably for about his first 9 or 10 holes, there will literally be zero spectators watching him on the course. And it got me thinking, when is the last time that's probably happened to him? It's probably been 30 years plus since he was 10 or 11 or 12 years old that he's played in a competitive tournament with no viewers watching him.
He's going to see what it's like to be on like the buy.com tour.
Exactly.
Like the web.com tour.
Yep.
Can you imagine having a ticket to that event and not being able to go out there and watch Tiger Woods?
I think you're right, Jeff.
Refund my ticket.
He's going to like it. Tiger's the kind of guy where little things like phones and cameras clicking bother him, so he's going to love it.
Dub, how do you feel about Derek Carr? Goober?
I mean, he's a little bit of a nerd, I think. I mean,
nerd, all right.
You know, I thought the baby oil sunscreen debate, I thought it was funny on the show, but I mean, some of his stuff was a little awkward on camera, but, you know, not everyone is seeking all that attention all the time with the cameras on, but, you know, we'll see. I'm excited for episode two.
I need to ask this question because we talked about Home Alone being remade yesterday. And
did you see what Macaulay Culkin posted?
Yes.
Is that what you sent me, Dub?
Yeah, I saw that yesterday on Twitter, and I immediately sent it J-Mart's way because of our conversation yesterday on the show. And I almost fell out of my chair when I first saw that thing.
Yeah, it was quite amusing, and it also showed me that I was not following Dub on Twitter. So that was a thing as
Yeah,
well.
By the way, in case you didn't see it and you're listening, Macaulay Culkin posted a photo of him on his laptop on a couch, dressed kind of like Jeff Schwartz is dressed at his home studio right now.
Gross.
With his belly showing and takeout food all over the couch, a pack of cigarettes, and he basically said, this is what Home Alone rebooted would look like.
Yeah, yeah, the biggest problem is the phone. The biggest problem is everybody has a cell. Like, the whole point of Home Alone is you could not have it happen now because everybody has devices. So how are you going to reimagine this for 2019? Like, you're telling me the McAllister, did you see that house? That was the crown jewel. Remember, that's what Harry and Marv said. That was the whole reason they wanted that neighborhood, is because of how rich they were. Don't tell me that Kevin McAllister and the crew, even the kid that wet the bed, probably had an iPhone, you know, XS.
Does he have an Xbox? Does he have like a Nintendo 64 controller on the ground there?
In that video?
In the picture. It looks like he does. Yeah, the picture has almost 500,000 likes. It's fantastic.
Best stuff we've seen from Macaulay Culkin is, what was the ad? Was it Geico that they did kind of like a Home Alone deal during the Super Bowl this year? That was really good. Like, they went back and kind of redid a lot of the major stuff with Macaulay Culkin at his age now, going back through it. It was really good. I can't remember if it was the Super Bowl or if it was a little bit earlier, but it's one of the better ads I've seen in the last year or two. And now Macaulay stepping out here. Don't remake that movie, please, for all that is sacred. But Jeff, tell me about doing your daughter's hair.
Yeah, so there was a video yesterday of Jose Altuve doing his daughter's hair. It is
trying to.
So my daughter's hair is long. She's three. It's probably down almost, you know, it's past her mid back now. And so it's a process, dude. I have to. First of all, she doesn't sit still, and we call it beauty shop. And like, when she does it with mom, my wife, or anyone else, she just sits still. But for me, it's brutal. So I have to take the detangler spray, and I have to spray her hair. And typically, just the bottom of her hair that's tangled. And I have to then, you know, brush it very gently because it's tangled. And I learned this too. You actually have to brush it from the bottom. You have to start at the very bottom of her hair and move your way kind of up. Because if you start up and go all the way down, you get all the. So you just start at the bottom, you brush it out, you spray it, you brush it out, you spray it, you brush it out. Then you have to do the top of her hair. And then you have to, when you do a ponytail to do it right, to get it tight, you have to pick it in strands. Like, you can't just grab her whole hair and put up in a ponytail. So then you have to like grab like a little bit at a time and kind of like shovel it into the other hand that's holding the hair. And then to make it look nice, you then have to hold the ponytail with like my left hand, and then I brush the top of her hair with my right hand and kind of re-grab the hair, all to, so it's like a really tight ponytail. And then I got to pull. I take the hair tie that's on my wrist, and mind you, I use like my wife's hair ties, the bigger ones, because the baby rubber bands, I can't do in my fingers. So then I'm holding her ponytail with my left hand. I then like switch, I pull it off, and then I hold on my fingers, and then I put the hair tie on, and then I do her hair. And then the problem is then, because my hands are so big, there's too much space between where I tie her hair and her actual scalp. And then the back of the ponytail kind of droops. So now I've had to, like, as I'm doing it, make sure that I grab tight and like shove the hair tie down really close to her scalp to make sure the bottom of the hair is not like sagging down. And then it's like, ugh, and then I'm done. And then, of course, between the time that I do her hair and the time we leave school, she's going to mess it up somehow by playing on the couch, and her hair gets undone, or she's going to pull out herself and have to redo the whole process again. I'm just getting anxiety thinking about it.
Jeff, that was better than any football analysis you've ever done on this show. Just talking that through, like, I just kind of sat here dumbfounded listening to you go into the machinations of detangling spray and going from the bottom and the size of rubber bands. Like, I don't even know what to say right now.
And then some morning she asked for hair clips, and I'm like, babe, I'll do your hair for you, and I'll just put the clips in. I'm not like using the clips as part of the holding your hair up thing. I'm not doing it. You know, and then also she loves the hair ties. Like last night I went in her room about 8:30. She actually was pretty cute. She was reading a book to one of her babies, and she had two hair ties on her arms. I go, Emmy, you can't have these in bed. So like she gets up in the middle of the night, or when she gets into bed, she gets up, goes to the bathroom, and grabs two hair ties every night. I'm like, Emerson, you can't give me your hair ties back, please.
Why can't she have hair ties in the bed?
Because
she's not an animal. She's not going to swallow them.
No, but what if? But they were on her arm. Like, what if she puts them all the way up her arm and it
cuts off her circulation?
For the whole night.
Okay.
It's just not good. The only bad thing that's going to happen. I mean, it's a very low probability that happens. But she's had them like before, like a hair tie like, up around her knee, like on her legs, just because she's just wants to put it up there. Like it's so I just take them away.
This is a nightly thing.
It's like Zeke Elliott's half shirt.
Nightly. Yeah. I mean, right now, cause I'm doing the show in the mornings, I'm not having to put her hair up, thankfully. And last year her preschool teacher put her hair up every day, the beauty shops. I didn't have to do it at all. I just brought her to class. We brought a pack of, big bag of hair ties, rubber bands, the baby rubber bands, and hair clips the first day, and we just used them all year. So luckily Lindsay would do her hair every morning, and it was wild, dude. She did her hair different every day, and I guess Emmy would ask, would tell her what she wanted. So sometimes she wanted, double pigtails. She wants a braid. She wanted like a little braid in her hair up. I mean, it's just, oh man, learning how to braid is going to be rough. I'm gonna have to do that at some point, I guess.
This is Jason Martin along with Jeff Schwartz. Clay Travis will be back on Monday. Jeff is at Jeff Schwartz. I'm at J Martin Zone. Crew in LA. Dub is here with me in the Music City. You made me laugh yesterday, Jeff, on Twitter. Sometimes you have really good quips back to some of the idiots that tweet you. But this, I don't know why this one caught me so strongly. Maybe it was just the timing, but somebody sent you a very poorly worded tweet. Like the grammar was.
Yeah.
Real bad, and your response was thoughts and prayers to this tweet, bud. That's one of your best. Like, you need to put that one in the hall of good.
I've done that a little bit with the thoughts and prayers thing, because I mean, obviously, I think it gets overused on social media now, it's a funny thing to tweet to someone who like sent an actual probably serious tweet. They're like, I'm gonna get Jeff Schwartz, and I just say thoughts and prayers. So it's so funny, man. Like, look, and I appreciate a lot of the people that do respond to me. And I know that a lot of people that do like my tweets are not responding, because most sane people don't respond to every tweet that I have. But there are people that just want to go at me, and they're just not very bright, man. And so I'm able to just swat them away very quickly.
Well, look, most of the loudest voices on Twitter are not the smartest voices on Twitter. Most of the smartest people on Twitter aren't constantly tweeting. Now, that's not always true. There are some people that have high volume that do. But a lot of folks are more discerning about what they say, and they choose when to say something when they actually feel like it has value, as opposed to just throwing stuff out there constantly. We had somebody tweet us a little while ago and said, when Tiger played in Chattanooga in the U.S. Amateur in 91, he was 15, and the NCAA in 96, when he was 20, he had huge crowds watching him then. Today, no crowd. Today, it's Tiger Woods and his caddy and, I don't know, an oatmeal cookie or whatever it is that he eats during his round. It'll probably be, I mean, it's just going to feel like he's out on a golf course. But you have to wonder if Tiger Woods probably on private golf courses somewhere where nobody's there or they see him all the time. But even if he was just like out on a course, you feel like I would probably stop playing or at least try to be behind him by a hole so I could watch the entire thing, not maybe get exposed that I'm just following around like it's my own private tournament. But it would be hard even just seeing him on a golf course not to immediately start following him or paying attention to what he's doing.
I have to think that Does he golf? I mean, I know he like golfs with the president every now and then, right? I mean, that course is probably just secured off, so
right.
He's not, you know, no one's getting close to him. But I mean, I have to imagine he's probably not playing on a lot of public golf courses, because you would see videos of him, would you, of him practicing?
Yeah.
I think there's, he obviously plays somewhere during the off season of golf. I don't know where that is, but. Or maybe he's not playing very much. He uses kind of the first couple of tournaments. Isn't that one like the Bahamas where people shoot like 37 under that he goes and plays? Maybe that's the first
with
time.
With his back, he's probably not out there playing a whole lot of rounds these days.
How about that tournament? Like literally, it's like 30, like the champion's 37 under.
See, I hate that. I like my, that's why I like the U.S. Open.
Are you
like
rooting for the course?
Majors.
Are you a course guy? Do you root for the course?
I'm not necessarily. I'm not rooting for struggles. I'm rooting to watch the guys that are that good still be that good and be tested at that level. It's not that I'm necessarily. I do root for the course, though. I love the U.S. Open. It's my favorite event sport.
Course rooting guy.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Danny, Method Man. This was his first record. Tikal, I believe. Not was this the best in your opinion? Of the Woo solo records, it was not for me. I thought Liquid Swords is probably still the top of that heap.
This is actually Method Man from Wu-Tang Clan.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's not off of it. Well, I was thinking, I guess I was thinking Bring the Pain off Tikal, but when you look at Meth's like solo, I know a lot of people really liked Tikal.
Yeah.
And I did too, but I didn't think it was the top of the heap. I thought that Jizz's Liquid Swords, I thought the Beneath the Surface, I even thought maybe one of Ghostface's albums might have risen above it.
Did you guys get to watch the Wu-Tang Clan special, the documentary series
the Showtime?
On Showtime?
I have it. Yeah. I actually got screeners of it and didn't have a chance to sit down and watch it. I'm still planning to, though.
Really good. Whether you like hip-hop music or not, really well-made documentary that Showtime put out. I think it was like 5 parts. So if you have time to watch that, definitely look up the Wu-Tang Clan documentary on Showtime.
It was like the Defiant Ones a couple years ago on HBO, which was absolutely tremendous as well. I just need to quit life. I'm going to blame it on the protein bar, but I'm like sitting here talking to Peter Burns on Twitter because he put out his top 5 boy band list, and he put Another Bad Creation in there. And so I was joking about the Beatles, and I was just like, well, they didn't have I Want to Sex You Up and All for Love, so obviously Love Me Do is not going to hold up. And he replies, Color Me Bad, and I realized I got Color Me Bad and ABC mixed up. I'm just done.
Oh, man.
It's all just a wrap for me today. I'm just going to reset this entire day. But let's do some Animal Thunderdome here to end the hour.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I have a bulging constrictor stuck to my face.
Ma'am, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
All right, Danny, it's time for some footwell. What do you got?
This headline reads, Florida dog owner pries open alligator's mouth to save beloved pet.
Nope. Your pet's gone.
Mess with this guy's dog. A pet owner in Nokomis, Florida, recently wrestled his black lab from an alligator's mouth. After the gator managed to get a hold of his dog last Friday afternoon, the man, who hasn't been identified, reportedly heard the commotion from inside his house. He ran out the back to find the dog and the gator in the canal that's behind his home. He jumped in, pried the gator's mouth open, retrieved his dog. The man and the dog were both injured, although a representative for Florida Fish and Wildlife said both are expected to recover.
Dogs, bruh.
Yeah, so you're both saying you would not save your dog?
I don't know. It depends on.
You couldn't just stand there and watch your dog get eaten.
I don't know what I would. I wonder if I wonder if the alligator was confused. The alligator was like, "Wait, what is this man doing?" I remember Clay always talks about what he can do to an alligator.
The alligator, he went from tasting chicken to tasting steak. That's what the alligator was thinking.
I know Clay always has his ideas of how he would like defend himself against every single animal. I love it.
Well, not just animals. I mean, he thinks that he could have made the play on Stephon Diggs.
Oh,
that
was
one of the things he said a couple of years ago.
I know.
quickly, we have time for one last one here. Yep. Venomous snake missing at the Bronx Zoo. Did you guys see this?
Nope, sure didn't. Not going to New York.
not going to the Bronx.
The staff there insists there's no danger. They have a sign out front of the zoo that says, It's a 4-foot-long mangrove snake missing, but don't worry, it's only mildly venomous.
Oh, well, that's good to know. But I'll tell you what, this is a stat you probably weren't expecting, Danny. That snake also has more home runs in Camden Yards than do the Tigers or the Giants in their home fields.
Don't!
Not even 10 games. That snake probably in one game. That seriously. Just a little bit venomous means I'm moving out of the state of New York. You don't play around with snakes.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back to the Geico Outkick Studios. Clay Travis not available for the rest of this week, as he hasn't been all week. He'll be back off his vacation on Monday, set for the football season. Jeff Schwartz played for football in many different places for 8 different years in the NFL. He's at Jeff Schwartz on Twitter. I'm Jason Martin, host of the Jason Martin Show, heard Fox Sports Radio Sunday mornings 3 to 6 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm on Twitter at JMartZone. This guy's at Pro Football Doc, one of the best follows out there. Amazing just how he's risen up. You talk about how Mike Pereira kind of changed the game for officials and all of the things that he has been able to do, and it's been very hard to duplicate as other networks have tried to do the same thing and it hasn't worked. Well, this guy has changed the game as it relates to what we know about injuries, and he is Dr. David Chow, who worked for 17 years as a team doctor for the San Diego Chargers. Doc, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks for the intro, and I'm here working like you are. What about Clay? It's football season. Why is he on vacation?
Because he's always on vacation. That's why. Yeah. So tell me about Antonio Brown's feet. I know that you were sort of – you didn't buy into the frostbite thing. I think that now that it's been clarified, you've sort of seen the nuance of everything that's going on. But explain what exactly is happening with the bottom of Antonio Brown's feet.
I'll try and keep it as simple as possible because it is medically fairly technical. It's not frostbite. Frostbite occurs more in the toes, not in the soles of the feet. It is some sort of cold burn on top of a, quote, mild case of trench foot where the bottom of the foot is macerated and wet. And before fans blame Antonio Brown and say, you know, wear the booties and whatever. If you don't wear the booties for the cold therapy, cryotherapy, you don't get this happening to you. I think it was a perfect storm. With the macerated foot, trench foot, from weather, moisture conditions, his training, working out, etc., mild case of like World War One trench foot, standing in the swamp in the trenches, etc. That left moisture on the bottom of his foot. When he did the cold therapy, the cryotherapy, and he probably, this is my hunch, has done cryotherapy many times before without using the booties. It's not mandatory, and it doesn't freeze your foot like this if you don't. But if your feet are wet or there's moisture, it does potentially freeze it because water conducts. Think about it this way. If you run outside in the cold for a few minutes without a jacket and it's freezing temperatures, you're cold, but you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
But if you jump into or fall into the freezing cold temperatures of the ocean, you don't last more than a minute or two because you start to shiver. It's the conduction of the cold and through the liquid. And I believe it was this combination that caused this unique situation. By the way, something I have not never saw in my 17 years in the NFL, et cetera. So I think that the term frostbite was just a lay term that was used, and that's probably what confused me. And that's why I came out so hard and said, this is not frostbite, and this is not frostbite. But the cold did have something to do with making the macerated wet soles of his feet a little worse. Hopefully that explanation makes sense. I try to simplify. If you go to my Twitter timeline, there's a more complicated explanation, more detailed as to why I get there. But let's keep in mind, I haven't examined him. All
right.
I've seen is this Instagram picture and then seen the reports, etc. And I'm doing a Quincy Medical Examiner, or a medical Mike Pereira, so to speak, a Quincy Medical Examiner from afar for people who are aware of that old Jack Klugman show, deductive reasoning. Medically.
Yes.
So the one thing that I don't understand this whole thing. Well, I do understand it, but just from Antonio Brown's perspective, like, his job is to use his feet, obviously, right? He is he's an athlete that his feet are very important. How do you end up having your feet get so wet like this? You're wearing socks that obviously help with this. You should be, you know, taking your shoes out of your cleats after you're done working out. Like, I don't understand how his feet can get so macerated like this, being a high-priced professional athlete with private trainers and private therapists and things like that. How does this end up happening in the first place?
Well, you make a good point. And the first time I wrote about it a few days ago, that was my big point. Like, what happened here? How does it get so bad? And look, there are some medical conditions where you excessively sweat in your palms or the soles of your feet. I'm not saying Antonio Brown has that. He probably doesn't. I mean, he's not a rookie. I mean, he's trained a lot before.
Right.
He does overtrain some, right? I mean, you see all the Instagram videos and whatever, and some have pointed out that he's been seen, you know, working out no socks and Gucci loafers, et cetera, on occasion. Look, I don't know how often he does that. But, you know, and it is strange because it's not like he's coming out of a sweaty, hot, humid training camp in the South or something like that where it's hot and now he has this. He's coming into training camp in Napa Valley with something like this. My guess is it's a combination of his traveling around, hard workouts. He started to get this, and it was manageable, and he was managing it. And then here's the perfect storm where there's this cryotherapy thing with the water, and then it all of a sudden escalated all of a sudden. It is interesting, yeah, he's known to travel with personal trainers all the time. So you do make a good point. And quite honestly, I wish Hard Knocks would have kind of addressed that point in episode one, but they didn't.
Yeah, they didn't address very much at all. And I know Gruden's been asked, when's he going to be back? And this is pure speculation because you don't know. And obviously these things can be different from case to case. But if you just had to guess, I mean, he's not going to miss the season for this, but how long is this going to be a nuisance for Antonio Brown and then larger, I guess, for the Oakland Raiders?
Well, you know, he's gone to see a couple of opinions on the bottom of his foot. But look, I wrote in the article, I don't see this extending into the regular season. Certainly, it could extend some in the preseason. Certainly, it can affect the acclimation to a new offense, a new team, and a new quarterback. But, you know, I'm not saying he's going to come back tomorrow, but I think he's going to come back well before the regular season gets going. If you think about it, if you get, it's not quite the same as blisters. You get a blister on the bottom foot. How long does it take to heal, right? Now, he can run now, but as he really puts pressure on it to make the hard cuts that he needs to, it sort of aggravates the situation. So I think it's smart to wait till he really is fully healthy, and I don't think it's going to be something that's going to affect the regular season other than perhaps the preparation for the regular season.
Looking at Niners rookie Nick Bosa, he had the sports hernia, the lower abdominal surgery in college, missed the rest of his senior season. Then he had a hamstring, I think on the first day of OTAs, was held out for the rest of the offseason program, came back a little bit later in training camp, now has a sprained ankle. At what point do you start getting worried about these injuries piling up for such a young player?
Well, you know, I hate the label injury prone, so no one should put that on any player, and much less Nick Bosa. The injuries seem to be different injuries. The latest one, it's not like recurring in the same body part or an area of weakness. Hamstring injuries are very common for fast twitch athletes like him, especially in the early part of training camp in the first 10 days or so due to acclimation to football. Jeff, I know you've seen that in your career with your friends and teammates, et cetera. And, you know, there's no video of this, but apparently he just rolled his ankle, and it's a mild ankle sprain. So I think that's in the stuff happens category. None of this should really affect him going forward. And even his injury in college with the sports hernia, core muscle injury, it was real. And, you know, but my guess is, you know, because it was college, because, you know, his whole family is a legacy of first-rounders, that his focus was on being the best first-round player and the best professional he could be. Could he have finished out at Ohio State? I'm not calling him soft. I'm just saying everyone has priorities in life. Could he maybe have come back a little bit? The injury wasn't like as devastating as it was made out to be. It was real, and good on him for taking care of it. So I don't think he's somebody who's got a lot of these injuries that have kept him out a lot of time. I think it's just a lot of attention to every little injury because of who he is.
You mentioned the little hamstring pull. It feels like we're getting a little bit more of these as training camp begins, just because I think guys don't do specific football training. They do a lot of sprint training. You know, they do a lot of running in the camp and do football activities, and the movements are a little different. So I got two questions here. One, are we seeing more of these just because of the training now has changed for athletes? And two, you know, they seem to not go away all season. How worrisome, if you have a favorite player on a team that has a hamstring pull in the beginning of the season, how worrisome is that for the entire season?
Well, depends on the degree of the hamstring strain, and depends on the player, the position, the type of player, et cetera. And so it's hard to judge. That's one of the harder things for me to look at on video. You guys know I do this silly little thing. You look at video and you get an impression of what it is. That's great for traumatic injuries. But on a hamstring, it's hard to tell, even if there were video. And right now, there's no video and no formal injury reports in the preseason. It's kind of why I try and put out this preseason injury report. You can see on my Twitter timeline and update it across the league, just to try and give people an idea and keep track of what's going on, and you can sign up for it for free. But it's hard to tell exactly on a hamstring because, you know, let's say you do have film and a guy pulls up. Does he pull up because he has a hamstring tear and he can't go and he limps off? Or does he pull up right at the moment before it actually tears and saves himself? You don't know. And heck, in early season, you know, how do you know he doesn't pull up because it's a cramp? And that's another thing that happens early on. As far as training goes, you know, training's pretty good, but it's just hard to duplicate football. And this current CBA probably doesn't help, you know, as you try and jam so much in to the same practice, right? I mean, you know, we all know how coaches work. I mean, if you're used to getting 80 plays of work in two practices, you're going to try and jam in 75 in one. You know, you work on two fields, you know, it's higher paced, this, that, the other, and the early acclimation injuries sometimes can happen. The other thing I think that happens is media and the reporting. I mean, I think some of these hamstring strains didn't get reported as often. Now I, you know, on my Twitter timeline, I get reports from people that says, oh, someone's over on the side and the trainer's talking to him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 10 minutes later, he's fine, you know, kind of thing. Every little thing is dissected, and it used to be only the stars got reported. Now, heck, the third-string offensive lineman or fourth-stringer gets a report nowadays.
David Chow is at ProFootballDoc on Twitter. It is a great follow. If you're not doing that, you need to take care of that problem. You don't seem to be too concerned about Andrew Luck's calf. Because I hear calf, and when it happened, you said, no, this is an Achilles thing. It seems more Achilles-like for Kevin Durant. And Durant's name has been mentioned as it relates to Andrew Luck. But tell us why you feel like he's going to be healthy for week one against the Chargers.
Well, you guys asked some great questions, and I'm trying to keep my answers succinct, but you guys asked multi-part, great, detailed questions here, so I love it. First of all, Andrew Luck's situation, and by the way, Derrick Henry's situation down in Tennessee, mm-hmm. is not Kevin Durant's situation. I get Adam Schefter's report. I get why players like that and coaches, and we in the public see Kevin Durant, see what happened there, and draw a simple association and worry about Andrew Luck and Derrick Henry. They're not the same situations. If you've been following me, you see I was concerned about Kevin Durant from the get-go, from the first time he hurt his calf/lower leg and his return, and even when he returned, et cetera. I don't have the same concern for Luck and Henry. By the way, I am much more worried, and I put it in the preseason injury report, about Derrick Henry than Andrew Luck for several reasons. I have no idea how severe either one of them are, and I love Coach Vrabel and respect him, but they don't give any injury information. You know, I don't know that they fully, how much they even confirm about the calf at all, much less how much it is in any timeline. But Derrick Henry's injury just happened. Andrew Luck's was a couple months ago. Yes, calf injuries can linger, but look at the time frame. And also factor in the positions that are played and the type of player they are, Derrick Henry versus Andrew Luck. I'm much more worried about the calf lingering and potentially affecting Derrick Henry as we go into the season than Andrew Luck. Add into the fact that it's not like a Kevin Durant injury. It's been around longer. And Andrew Luck's probably learned an appropriate hypervigilance to injuries in terms of what happened with the shoulder and not pushing through and wanting to wait till he's 100%. And he's used to Frank Reich's system anyways. And what's the reason to rush? And his mental makeup has changed based on the shoulder injury. But understandably, Colts fans and whatever are not really trusting of the situation because they got okey-doked before in terms of the shoulder. Oh, next week he's going to play, he's going to throw. Oh, next week he's going to do it. It's another week he's going to do it, and then he was out for the season the year before. So I get why people are a little suspicious of the situation.
We got 1 minute left. I want to ask you just a quick question. Do you have a favorite surgery to perform? I know that you still are very active in that field. Like, is there one that you feel is your quote-unquote favorite to do?
Well, the one I just finished? No, just kidding. I don't know, just anything arthroscopic, anything where you're helping people. But, you know, ACLs is probably the favorite. It's more complicated, more steps, but then perhaps more satisfying when you finish. So it's a little bit like an orchestra because there's a team of people working together and at the same time, much like a football play.
Dr. David Chow, you're the best. It's amazing. Make sure you follow at Pro Football Doc. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Doc.
That's some just unbelievable stuff right there. Just outrageous. And I'm in Nashville, and I just had to tweet out about the Derrick Henry thing because that's not going to make Titans fan happy at all. Well, but let's
so
go ahead.
The calf thing real quick. When the Kevin Durant thing happened, I actually had a bunch of people that texted me and said they had calf injuries. Not what Durant had, but just in general. And they said that they do take a long time to heal, more than you think. And they're more worrisome than you think as well.
So just the idea that Derrick Henry's is more concerning to him than Andrew Luck's is very intriguing to me. And I do like the idea that Luck might know how to manage his body a little better because he had to go through this already. So he might know what his limitations are and be more careful. I think that's interesting as well.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.